All right, you are listening to The Dungeon on 91.3 WLVR. And with us right now is guitar virtuoso and legend Yngwie Malmsteen. Thanks for joining us, Yngwie.
Thank you for being there.
And I'd like to get right into talking about the new album, Perpetual Flame, which is an excellent piece of work.
Thank you.
And it's been a little while in between albums.
I certainly have not been inactive. I've been more busy last 2 years than I have been in my whole career, all of it, the whole career. One of the reasons I call it Perpetual Flames because it doesn't seem to end. I mean, it's just a constant wheel turning, you know, for me. It just never stops. I mean, it's my own drive, of course, but on top of it now, I've done, I think, something like 15 to 16 interviews every day for the last few weeks. And it might sound, so what? But no, that's not very common, you know. So what happened with that last album, the one before this one, was I toured a lot on it, and we toured in different markets. We played in all over the world with it, you know, Australia, China, South America, you name it, everywhere. Plus, we did two semi big legs in America with it. You know, in any event, we did a lot of touring on it, yeah. It wasn't like I was just sitting home doing nothing. And during this touring, I was writing songs.
Okay.
And I got to a point where I felt like, okay, it's time to do it. I had the luxury of owning two studios on the full-blown studios, not little Pro Tools home jobs. You know, this is the... Because I built them before the stuff came, you know, thing to do, you know. So it is irrelevant now. But I have the luxury of owning two studios. So I just said to the drummer, okay, time to go in now. And so we went in and we recorded, like, I don't know, 25, 30 tracks, whatever, something like this.
Oh, wow.
All the ideas I had. And then, we don't tour again. which is unusual, because what you do, you start drums, and then you put the bass and guitars and keyboards and put the lyrics in and all that, you know.
Right.
And then you mix it, then you go on tour. But no, not this time. So I went to, after Joseph, then I went on tour. I came back, put the guitars and bass on, started writing some lyrics, and went on tour again. And then I went to all these different places, like Russia and Istanbul and places like, you know, but it's a string overdubs, you know, for the song Strong songs. Anyway, but what I'm trying to point out, when you mentioned it's been a long time, it's not been a long time, because what I've done is been constantly, when I'm not touring, I've been in the studio, and then when I'm not in the studio, I've been touring. So it's been like, in fact, I wish it was a little more time to play tennis and drive for Royce, but I haven't had any time to do that lately. And that's actually how I came to the conclusion to change the singer as well. Because every time I came back, I heard the songs a little different. And I write all the lyrics and everything. So when I had the songs like Death Dealer and Be Careful What You Wish For, Live to Fight Another Day, and all those very, very powerful songs, I realized that I need someone to present these songs in, you know, what I heard in my head, you know, kind of thing. And Tim came in and did a couple of songs, and we heard it, and it was amazing, and the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah, I think he fits your style perfectly. I think I think your two styles complement each other.
Absolutely.
How did you come, you know, to meet Ripper then? How did that all happen?
It's funny. I've been asked that question 15, 16, 20 times a day, but I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea how it happened. Yeah. I bumped into him a couple of times, we got talking. I don't remember. He came in and he did it, and it sounds great.
However it happened, I'm glad it did, because, like I said, it fits perfectly. It really, really
Absolutely.
Does.
Sure does.
He's got such a powerful voice, you know, and with your playing together, it's incredible. And do you see this as a long-time collaboration then with Ripper?
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I would love that. Yeah, of course.
Very cool, very cool. Now, I want to ask you a little bit about recording itself. Now, when you're recording... how much of your soloing is actually written out, and how much is actually improvised?
It's 100% improvised.
Really?
Yes.
That's incredible, because I've seen you a few times live, and it just seems to me that you, whatever you feel at that moment, you just let rip.
That's right. That's what I do. That's just, you know, for better or worse, because you know, if you don't have a good day, then it ain't gonna be good. I've learned, you know, throughout the years, since I've been doing it for a long time, that there's a certain sort of like mental, kind of psychological the journey I you know. So life, now it seems to me that I used to have bad nights, but very lately there's virtually no bad nights. You know, I used to be awful, but that was pretty good. I mean, it's some nights are better than others, of course, but there's never really any bad nights. In studio, however, it's a little different thing, because in studio you got to impress yourself, basically. And there's no feedback from audience and stuff like this, so... And I don't like to do solos more than one time, you know.
Right.
I could go in and do it, and if it's right, it's right. If it's not, then I'll do another day. You know? I don't go in and do it like, oh, let me do another one. I just don't do that.
Right.
Then we have tracks like Cantici di Diablo, which is the most, you know, complex, challenging piece of music I ever written, ever. I don't know, on perpetual time. And that one, is written and improvised, because you have written sections back in, you know, E major, A minor, D major, you know, D, and so forth, F, G, what I'm talking about. And so, what happens then is that you can do different things on top of these progressions. You know, I could do the same thing ever over and over, but I don't like doing that. So and that's where you have to come up with interesting things as well. This is very demanding stuff for me. I mean, so because you just down roll and you do something, or you kind of go downhill instead, you know, and then you get not inspired. So, but as I said, yeah, it's a good question. It's 100% improvised. The solos are 100% improvised, but the first is a song. Carrie Diablo, or a lot of stuff I did with my concertos, that's written, and you can be played different ways, even though it's written on me, you know? So, and I don't like to play the same every time, because I just don't like that, you know? And I wouldn't be enjoying what I'm doing if I played everything the same all the time, you know? There would be a challenge, and it wouldn't be exciting. And I guess that's why I'm still doing what I'm doing, because it's still exciting to me, you know?
Now, and speaking of solos and instrumentals, you're known for instrumentals as well, which are represented here again on the new album. And for you, which is harder to write, an instrumental or something with lyrics?
Well, it's two different things. It's a funny story because what became to many sort of like the template of instrumental guitar was my first solo album.
Mm-hmm.
But that was originally not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do an instrumental album. I was in a band called Alcatraz, and they gave me a solo deal while I was in Japan and said, oh, yeah, we want to do a solo record, but it has to be instrumental. I'm going, I don't want to do an instrumental album. But they said, oh, yeah, well, that's what we want. And I figured, okay, it's better to have an instrumental album than not an album at all. So that's what I did. And then eventually I left Alcatraz, and I did a Marching Out album. And so... The instrumental record wasn't meant to be even released anywhere outside Japan, but it became, as you might know, it became a little more than that, you know.
slightly more.
Yeah, okay. So, but it was kind of funny anyway, because, and those most of those songs that I had written when I was a kid in Sweden anyway, Black Star and those songs that they were written when I was a teenager in Sweden. You know?
Before even in Steeler and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, the song Black Star was on the tape that I sent to Mike Vaughn, you know, 1981 or whatever it was. And, as I said, this a long time ago. But I find myself probably spending the most time, even, you know, being the producer, being the songwriter, being the, you know, arranger and engineer even this time, I spend a lot of time on everything, and soloing is what I spend the least time on. That's like one take and that's it. Boom, see ya. You know, and I like it that way because that's something that has to be spontaneous. You know, but the lyrics, they have to be clever, and they I'm very very picky with that. You know, as far as rhythm of the rhymes and the rhythm, inside the melody. I don't like when you throw in an extra syllable just to get in there.
Just to make it like fit.
That. Yeah, I don't like that kind of stuff. So I spend a lot of time on the lyrics. So. It's a different thing. Yeah, it is a different thing. I don't. I think instrumentals should be more of a, almost like a kind of like a, not a showcase is the right word. It should be exciting. You know, it shouldn't just be. I'm completely lost now. I don't even have an idea of what I'm doing. I just completely do what I do, and I don't and I like it too much. But that's why it's hard to describe it. It has to be heard. So maybe yeah.
And the new album is on Rising Force Records, right?
That's right.
And is that your own label?
Yes, indeed.
So, and this is the first album on that label, right?
Indeed, yes. We decided to start this label, which is just distributed through Koch, which is major distributor. And in Europe is Pinnacle, and Japan is Universal. So it's worldwide. It's a combination of the way that the things have been going with the downloads and the way things have been going with the whole industry has been suffering a lot from that. So that the labels per se that used to be there, the ones that are still there, which are not that many, are suffering so much that they can't really handle the artists that well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bad scene, really. And it's all thanks to our beautiful downloading, yeah? It's a bad thing, people. It's not a good thing. It's by the way, by downloading, you only get like a very, very small sound bit of what it actually sounds like. It's like a very, very small pixel picture, you know,
yeah.
Instead of like a high-resolution picture. If you listen to a CD compared to like download MP3, it's like night and day. So you're losing the sound quality, plus you don't get the nice artwork and all that stuff. So anyway, so that was one reason we want to do that. Also, I have a tremendous back catalog that I own, you know, and so that means we're going to do that as well. It's a big job, though. And my wife, she's also my manager. She's basically doing... She's pretty much handling that stuff, you know, the label end of it. But it's a lot of work, but I think in the end of the day, it's the best thing to do.
You're like a one-man show anymore, Yngwie. Artist, engineer, producer, record label, the whole shebang.
Yeah, you know, it isn't what it used to be, you know. Back in the day, you know, when I first started out, it was the labels were big, you know, the guy was sitting with his big cigars behind his big desk and stuff, and you had your private jets and limos and all that. And it was all good fun, but that doesn't exist anymore. That's gone.
Yeah.
That does not exist. So, I mean, I've never been a big fan of the industry per se anyway. I mean, I've always felt that was kind of like a necessary evil, you know? But that's you gotta do. You want to be in the game, you gotta play the game.
I was gonna say. Do you see the industry more coming to like a do-it-yourself type thing? You know, for bands and artists.
Well, yes and no, because I think where it falls short is that this new recording technology that you can get now for very little money,
mm-hmm.
is so inferior. You know, I mean, it's nowhere near as good as the real thing. You know. What by that I mean, you know, real tube compressors and real mixer boards, and you know, I don't use the 2-inch tape anymore. But other than that, I use everything, you know, real live miking drums and leave real Marshall stacks mic'd up, and then all this processing stuff, you know, and that's where I think it's not a good thing. As far as putting the record out yourself, I think that's probably a good thing, people seem to think that everything can be done with a laptop now, and it's just not like that, you know. You know, if you listen to some of the albums, you know, from the, you know, the 70s even, you know, the organic sound of everything is so good, and I I'm going to keep that going, you know, and I'm very, really pleased with the sound on this new album I did, because...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
recorded in what I mean with old is that there are certain things that just never got better. Like Marshall stacks and Fender Strats and tube compressors and even SSL and Focusrite and you know, all these things that were designed in the 60s and 70s and 80s, they didn't get any better.
I totally agree with that. We talk about that here a lot. You know, like tube amps have such a warm sound to them. You can't beat that. And the sounds of the 70s, the recordings and stuff, the sound, there's something about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, but the same thing. It's like, you know, I have all the Pro Tools and all that stuff as well. I have all that stuff, and then that actually came out handy. I had my laptop with me, and I went to Istanbul, and I was hanging out with this guy. He's like a superstar over there. He's like a soap opera star and a singer and everything.
Okay.
I was hanging out with him in his studio there. The string section was there, and I heard the string section. I was going, wow, this is great. So I said, hey man, can you guys play a little bit on this? And I showed him the parts I wanted to do, and I just mic'd it up. I had my interface and my laptop and my tools and everything, and I just put it on I had a rough, you know, two-track of the song, 11th Hour, and I put the strings on. It sounds amazing. So in that sense, that it comes in really handy, you know. But to make the whole album like that, some people even use, like, sequence drums and sample drums and the process, like this, you know, modeling amps and stuff, no way. You never get me do that.
Very good. Keep it real.
Oh, yeah.
And you just finished up touring for Perpetual Flame. Was that the first?
Well, I finished one part of it. I mean, we have lots more touring.
That's what I was hoping. Is that just the first leg of the tour?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, very good.
It's pretty much coming up to Christmas now, so we're going to take a little break for Christmas now. And then we go to then we're going to go to South America and then Japan, and then we're going to concentrate on America for pretty much all of the spring now.
Oh, okay, very cool.
Yeah, so I'm sure it's going to be a summer thing in Europe, because that's when you have to go to Europe in the summer, because they have all the festivals.
Festivals, yeah.
We did this summer, this summer, just past June, we were there. Before the album was out, we were out playing with Priest and everything.
Okay.
And then, you know, it was great, you know, but I just came off the American leg now, and God bless America, man. That's all I was saying.
You know what? Two things, Yngwie. One, what drew you into classical music? And what is it, and what was it about the Stratocaster for you?
Okay, I started with a classical thing.
Sure.
When I was a little kid, I grew up in Sweden, yeah? And my older brother and sister were very, very musical. You know, and my uncle is an opera singer, and my other uncle is an engineer. He was part of the team that invented the CD technology for Philips and stuff. And he built studios. So I was constantly involved with music, even as a little kid, you know. Got my first guitar when I was 5 years old. So when I first started playing guitar, like a real fanatic, like I was as a kid, by the time I was like 9 and 10 years old, I could play every note Blackmore did, everything. You know, it was like a freak show, you know, like a little kid playing every note from in Japan. I mean, I've heard recordings from that time, and it's like, I'm going, well, how the hell did that happen? I don't know. But
it's in you, that's all.
Yeah, it's very strange, though. But in any event, I love Blackmore. I love, Hendrix. I love Brian May. And, you know, it's millions of guitar players. I love them. I think they're the greatest thing, you know. But they have one thing in common, all of them, which is that they all use, they base their playing on blues scales, which is pentatonic scale.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. God bless them for that, you know. It's just that I felt, because I was so small, and I felt like, well, I know how to do this now. This has got to be something else. And I heard some old, very old Genesis records with Peter Gabriel. And some of those chord progressions were very classical with, inversions and pedal notes and stuff like this. Very slow, nothing, you know, crazy. But so I figured, okay, listen to a lot of Bach and Vivaldi. So I did. And then I heard Niccolo Paganini on TV one time. Not him, but somebody playing his piece.
Right.
And that's why, oh, I'll hear that arpeggios and stuff. You know, I was freaking out about it, you know. So I wanted to do that, to implement that onto my guitar and my sound, which was already, by the time I was 11 years old, I had Marshall stacks and flash pots and smoke machines and everything.
Oh, jeez.
I was a freak. And yes, it's ridiculous, you know. But that's what, so I love that whole thing with, you know, the rock and roll look and sound, and all that, like really like loud and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the tonality of classical music with it, you know. Hence, you know, listen to Death of the Elephants. It sounds like a Bach inversion in the chorus, you know. So that's what I like to do. Where, you know, and as far as the Stratocaster goes, I think it would be a lot quicker for me to say, try to describe what I don't like about it, which is nothing.
Yngwie, that is a great answer.
Yeah, so that, to me, that's the ultimate, you know. I'm just looking at one right now. They're beautiful, they're amazing, they're functional, but yet amazingly beautiful, and I think it's probably should be the 20th the designer of the 20th century. You know, should get an award because it can never be better. Everything else, every other guitar is just a copy of that. You know, every other guitar is just a copy. You know, it's amazing how he designed Leo Fender to do that. You know,
I love that answer. That's a great answer. And a few years ago, you played, and you mentioned this earlier. You know, you worked with orchestras, symphonies, and did you have any plans to do that again?
Oh, I'm sure I will. I won't do that, but they, for this exact moment, it will be further in the future, you know. But I did what I most wanted to do, which was compose for the symphony and record the symphony and stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, so that was an amazing feeling to do that, you know. And I want to do it again, but it's no. I'm not a big hurry, and I'd rather be rocking right now, you know. Turn off the Marshalls,
crank it up, put them to 11.
Well, they're going a lot louder than I put them. You know, they're like hardwired to fool. You know.
Yeah.
And <isn't>, what? What?
Yeah, exactly. Talking to this ear, the other ear is no good. And as a player that's pretty much done everything, and pretty—I mean, let's face it—you can pretty much do everything. Where do you draw your inspiration from now?
Well, it's funny because I always based my playing on improvisation, and improvisation is the genesis of composition. So every time I pick the guitar up, there's something I do something a little different, and it'll come out different. And to me, it sounds what I mean with different is not, oh yeah, today I'm gonna play you know, with my little toe or something. No, it's just the notes. I just say, okay, I'll pick the guitar up and see what happens, you know. And that could be while I'm watching TV or whatever. So when that happens, something happens, and I go, wow, this is cool. You know, where it's like the riff from Death Deal or whatever. I record it, and then later on, I listen to it. Oh, well, this is great. Let's do something with this. And as far as playing live, that can never get old for me, you know. You know, it's exciting, you know.
And you did G3 a few years ago with Satriani, yeah, and Steve Vai. Anything like that in the future, you think, or?
Well, when they call me, I'll be there. I had a great time. It was really a lot of good. I had a good time, for sure.
Yeah, anytime you get, you know, an immense talent like that all together, it's incredible.
No, that was great. That'd be the best time, you know?
Yeah, very good. And what do you think about the label of Shredder?
That's cool. You know, shred some carrots, shred some cheese, you know. Seriously, it does, you know, sometimes people ask me, is it okay to call your music metal? I said, you can call whatever you want, man. Doesn't matter. You know?
It's music, bottom line, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, call it reggae influenced punk metal, punk jazz.
That's what I'm going to call it from now on.
Neo reggae metal.
There you go. Yeah. Well, some don't like the label of Shredder, you know. They seem it as to be limited and stuff, but I don't think...
Do you mean the Shredder? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've always done what I've done and never really felt that there was a name or anything for what I was doing. But I do remember when I first came to the States as a wee little boy, teenager, and I came to Southern California at first, and they talked in the back, yeah, dude, you shred, dude. And I used to think that was funny. I used to laugh at that because it was a little different.
See, that's the thing. Like you just said, I mean, it is what it is, but everybody...
Yeah, no, but yeah, look, everybody, you got to take it for what it is, and that's all.
Right, you know? But the thing is, everybody has to put a label on something. You know what I mean? Everything has to be labeled, whether it's right or wrong. Everybody has to put a label on something.
Well, I mean, that's cool. You know, I mean, some people feel like that's important. You know, I don't. I think that it doesn't matter, really.
Right.
You know, I think it's pretty clear, you know, what it is. You hear a couple of notes of it, you know, Maiden is Maiden, Priest, and that's metal, and, you know, you didn't. Whatever, I mean, cool, I guess I call it metal, whatever. And I guess the sometimes that's what I do as well. I'm not, you know, I don't look at it that way, you know.
Well, I know you got a lot to do yet, Yngwie, today.
Yeah.
So, no, I appreciate it, and thanks for giving us another great album.
Hey, thanks for having us. No problem, thanks for having
us. And good luck, and I hope to see you on the next leg of the tour.
You got it, man.
Take it easy.
See ya, bye.